Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Buying a car is an expensive investment, and it can be even more expensive if you make the wrong choice. My guest is Jack Gillis. He's the author of the car book, which is published with the Center for Auto Safety. We're going to discuss safety, gas mileage, how to get the best price, and a host of other things related to getting that perfect vehicle. Jack, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here.
We haven't talked to you for a while. We've done a lot of things on cars in the past, and I'm just really excited and eager to get to this one. And I'll have to tell our listeners, I just bought a new vehicle, and I'm glad to see it's one of your best buys.
Well, you made a good choice, Shirley.
Without your guidance, unfortunately, because your book just came out.
Well, you're lucky.
Yeah, I am, aren't I? All right, let's talk about this. First off, you obviously know what you're doing because this is your 32nd edition, and I think I have known you just about all those years.
Yes, you have. And in fact, this book has an interesting history because it began as a government publication back under the Carter administration, and it was the first time consumers had access to crash test performance, fuel economy ratings, and things of that nature in one easy-to-use format. And it became and still holds the record for the most popular free publication out of Pueblo, Colorado. The next year, when the Reagan team came on board, they decided this wasn't something that was in their best interests. So thanks to the Center for Auto Safety and Clarence Ditlow, we published it privately. My wife and I actually worked in the basement of our townhouse in Capitol Hill. And then it became a very popular book.
And so you sell it now?
Yes.
And people can go to the bookstores and online and all kinds of places. Can you purchase it through both the Center for Auto Safety and the Consumer Federation of America?
Yes, you can purchase it through the Center for Auto Safety. That's autosafety.org. And sales of the book through the center benefit the nonprofit Center for Auto Safety and helps them continue their work.
Is Clarence still the director there? He does good work.
Clarence Ditlow is still the director. He's been the director for over 30 years.
Oh, yeah. I've known Clarence for a long time, too. Y'all do very good work, and it's really important things to consumers. And I think, well, it is such a huge purchase. But in addition to that, you're putting your life into that vehicle when you get in and start driving. And that, to me, is a critical thing. Now, you looked at crash tests, all right? And this is one of the first times, as you said, that when you started publishing this, that consumers had access to this vital information. Do you find that there is a tremendous difference in the safety of vehicles?
Yes, there is, actually. And it's from two perspectives. First and foremost, the safety features that various vehicles have vary considerably, and that's one of the things that we rate in the car book, which vehicles have the most and the least safety features. Then the second factor is how well will that car protect you in an accident, and that's where the crash tests come in. And there are big differences in how relatively similar cars will perform.
What about even within the same manufacturer?
Even within the same manufacturer. Managing the crash forces is the most important thing that vehicle can do. And that's a function of how much crush has been built into that vehicle, how well the airbags will protect the occupants, and so forth. So those are things that you and I can't look at a car and make an informed judgment as to whether or not they're good or bad. And that's why our analysis of the crash test results and the Center for Auto Safety's analysis is so important, because it helps you separate the lemons from the peaches.
Who performs the crash test? Is that done by the government or is that a private agency?
This is done by you, Shirley, the American public.
I didn't know that. I didn't have an accident, Jack. Now, wait a minute.
The American public, through the U.S. Department of Transportation and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, crash tests these vehicles. And the vehicles are crash tested at 35 miles per hour into a fixed barrier, and the forces of that crash is measured on two dummies in the front seats of the vehicle. There's also now side crash tests. So cars are hit from the side, and a front and a back seat dummy then measure how well that car prevents another car from intruding and injuring you.
Are side airbags fairly common now?
Side airbags are very, very common. There's been a proliferation of airbags in cars, primarily because they do such a good job of protecting people.
Yes, they do.
And when you think about it, those of us who have been driving for a while remember old hard dashboards and very rigid steering wheels and metal-sided doors. Well, whenever you hit one of those things in a crash, you were severely injured. Now you're coming forward or going into the side into a cushion of air, and that makes a dramatic difference in how well you are protected.
Are there airbags in the back seat as well, or is it only the front
seat?
That's
coming. There are airbags coming out of the sides of the back,
okay,
and there are airbags that are eventually going to come out of the back of the front seats. So we'll be surrounded in airbags.
We'll be surrounded by them. And unfortunately, in used cars, we're hearing about a lot of airbag fraud where people are, you know, and that's a terrible, that's a subject for another discussion. But
well, it's a very important one, Shirley, and we can talk about that some other time. But we did discover that a number of repair shops do not put the airbags back in.
They put paper. We even read one incident.
Beer cans, sneakers.
Beer cans, piece of wood.
Mm-hmm.
It's really scary. Yes, that is a subject for another discussion. Okay, so you look at the safety issues. What would you say if you were telling a consumer what to buy? No, not, I don't mean literally what to buy. But if you're telling them how to go out and choose a vehicle, how would you put in order of importance the issues, the safety, the gas mileage, all of that?
Sure.
Well, and I know the big thing, of course, is what can you afford?
Yeah.
Is we're starting out with that premise. But other than that, what would you look for?
Well, there's two factors in addition to what you can afford. And that's a really important factor because it's very easy to go into a dealership and get moved into a more expensive car that is going to be more expensive to insure and have higher payments and so forth and so on. So make sure you understand what your limits are and stick to them. The good news is that there are plenty of really great cars for really great prices out there. So it's not like you have to give up safety.
Right.
To buy a less expensive car, you don't have to give up fuel economy, and you don't have to give up maintenance costs. There are plenty of small, inexpensive, good cars that are good in all those categories. So the first thing is to buy a car and look at its safety rating. The second thing is to take a good long test drive. You need to feel comfortable in that vehicle. You need to back it in and out of your driveway, make sure there's no blind spots, make sure you're comfortable with its acceleration and how it merges on a highway. You don't necessarily need a high-performance vehicle, but you need a vehicle that you're really comfortable with. Most of the complaints that we have about the cars that we own could have been avoided if you'd taken a longer test drive.
Right. Well, I bought a new vehicle. And I took a really long test drive.
Well, I was going to say that, Shirley. You actually did one of the smartest things. You rented
and you know
the car.
What? I'm not going to tell people until we identify who we are, so they're going to know how smart I actually was. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Jack Gillis. He's an auto expert at the Consumer Federation of America, and he's the author of, are you ready for this? The 32nd edition of the car book, and he's been doing it all of that time. He knows what he's talking about. And as I said before we took the mini break there, I bought a new vehicle, and I did do something, and it was totally unintentional. Let me not claim to be smart. But we took a vacation, and I ended up driving. Well, I'm just going to say what it was. It was a Chevy Traverse. I loved it. I came back here, and I've been driving a car for 11 years. I hadn't even thought about getting a new vehicle, but I fell in love with this one. And I came back here and looked at a number of other SUVs because I liked the height. I liked the ease of getting in and out of them. I just loved it. And I was in the high desert in Arizona, and I drove it through two snowstorms, and I felt very secure because it had all-wheel drive. So I came back, and that's exactly what I did, Jack. And, you know, wouldn't that be something for people to do, rent a car and drive it for a few days?
You know, that's an excellent idea. And with special weekend rental rates, you can often rent a car for a day for $25, mm-hmm. $35. The trick is when you go to rent the car, you need to say that I really only want the Chevy Traverse or the
right.
Hyundai Sonata or whatever vehicle it is you want to test drive, because you don't often get a choice.
Right.
But often on weekends where rental car companies have more cars available, you can go in and select a particular car and just drive it for that particular day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great way to feel whether or not that car is good for you.
I drove this vehicle. I drove the one in Arizona for 850 miles, almost 850 miles. And I love to drive, as you might gather. And, you know, everybody, there were four of us. It was very comfortable for four of us. And I'm not doing a promotion for Chevy or Traverse. This is just my own personal thing. And everybody has to find the vehicle that suits them. And I found that the thing that was most impressive to me, Jack, was the safety features in this vehicle. And let's talk about some of the things that I'd never had a car before that has a backup camera. Like, I'm going, ooh, this is awesome. And I understand there's probably going to be a mandate for a backup cameras in new vehicles in a couple of years because of the number of kids who are run over. It's a horrendous thing. I can't imagine what a parent would feel like.
Well, a backup camera can literally save hundreds and hundreds of children from being killed.
And they can save you a lot of money in insurance.
And they can save you money in insurance. But and what you referred to earlier, Shirley, there have been so many parents who have been absolutely devastated at running over their own children. So not only is a backup camera a great safety feature, but it will also help you park.
That's
true. It will also help those of you who aren't necessarily in environments where kids are around. So it's something that I believe will be as ubiquitous as a rearview mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be equally important because there is an amazing amount of blind spot behind almost every car
on the road.
Every
vehicle, and certainly an SUV like mine.
And then we have the technology today. The technology is not expensive. So we're very excited about the fact. And it's actually a woman by the name of Jeanette Fennell, who runs Kids in Cars, who single-handedly got the government to mandate that. And she is it's a perfect example of a citizen being very active and being very persuasive and not giving up. Now, the government just recently announced the fact that it may delay this implementation, so the consumer advocates are going to be fighting to keep it
mm-hmm.
in place.
So if you have a choice and you're buying a car, and if you're like me, you keep it forever, go out there and spend the extra money if it's not mandated to see if you can get it. You can't always get it on all vehicles, but it's something that you can get.
Very, very important feature, especially if you are buying a larger vehicle. And most of us are buying larger vehicles because we have kids.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So it's critically important if you have kids to have one of these backup cameras.
The other thing is I think it will keep a lot of people in grocery store parking lots from getting run over since they have a fondness for walking behind moving vehicles. It's appalling to me, excuse me, but that's one of my diatribes.
And it'll keep you from running into shopping carts.
There you go. That's a thought, too. And they are around. Well, you know, it is wonderful to see the cars. Now, what are you seeing in terms of trends of buying? Is buying America, how do the American cars stacking up to the imports? Can you evaluate that?
Sure. Well, we've just gone through a rather traumatic experience for the American car makers in which two out of the three had to be bailed out. And quite frankly, it was good that they were bailed out because they're coming back stronger. They're coming back with better vehicles. They've kept people employed and they're giving us broader choices. But as a practical matter, because all of the major car companies throughout the world are building cars here in the U.S., and all of the U.S. makers are building cars other countries, it's really getting hard to separate domestic from foreign. So for the most part, if you buy a Honda Accord built in Ohio, you know, you're employing a lot of Americans,
true,
using a lot of parts.
True.
So it's not what it was 20 years ago when there was a clear divide. Secondly, I think that one of the trends that we're seeing is that people obviously have become more and more concerned about fuel efficiency.
Well, with the price of gasoline, can you blame them?
It is
terrible.
Phenomenal, Sheila.
Shirley.
Shirley.
Yeah, I think.
You think.
You've known me too long, Jack.
I know. And one of the things that we've determined was last year – we spent more on the average household on gasoline than all of the other energy requirements of our entire house.
Really? Wow.
So it's become a huge factor for almost every one of us. And so therefore, we've put a lot of pressure on the administration to develop this new fuel economy standard, which is going to be implemented over the next few years.
And that will be something that's phased in gradually?
It will be phased in. It ends in 2025, and by 2025, all cars will have to get 54.5 miles per gallon on the average. So that will be huge for consumers. In the meantime, we're going to see more electric vehicles, we're going to see more hybrid vehicles, and we're going to see more fuel efficiency in the larger vehicles that many Americans really like.
Yeah, I think you do. There's a sense of safety. I'd never really thought about it before, but honestly, in driving, a heavier, bigger vehicle is, you know, the fuel efficiency in my car is not great. I knew that when I bought it, but it was a trade-off on what I wanted and what I would use, and we make a number of trips, so I'm end up being the driver these days. I love it. Okay, so you're going to look. Let's talk about fuel efficiency. You've talked about the new standards. Go out and you look at the sticker on the car, and it's going to tell you what the mileage per gallon is, city and country, doesn't it?
City and highway. That's
highway,
exactly
whatever.
Right.
Okay.
And those are important numbers because most of us who have been looking at these numbers for years remember the time when they really didn't predict what you were going to experience. The tests weren't as good as they are today. The tests today are much, much better. Now, they're not going to exactly predict how your mileage will be.
Well, it depends on how you drive.
Because it depends on how you
drive. Jackrabbit starts and all those things, they're not exactly kind to your car.
That actually has a major factor in it. But it's a great relative comparison. So it's so important to use that as a relative comparison. Now, the big news is that next year we're going to see brand new labels. And those brand new labels are going to rate the vehicles on a scale of 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to give you exact dollar amounts of how much more it's going to cost you to buy this car versus that car.
You can figure that out now, but you've got to go online. You've got to be pretty astute to do
right.
that.
And
let's just take a brief pause here to let everyone know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Jack Gillis. He's the auto expert at the Consumer Federation of America, and he's the author of the 32nd edition of the car book. And it's a great book. I heartily recommend it. I've known Jack all these years, and I've watched this book just become a real resource for consumers. So the Consumer Federation, what is the Consumer Federation's website?
Consumerfed.org.
Okay, and the car safety?
Is autosafety.org.
People
can go to autosafety.org and get all kinds of free information
right.
about safe cars, and also that's a good place to purchase the car book.
Yes. And it's a good investment, especially if you're looking at a car or even considering. Now, it probably is not going to be that much value to a person buying a used car.
That's right. The good news is consumers out there in the used car market can expect to save about 50% in ownership and operating costs over buying a new car.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of good used cars on the marketplace.
And a lot of them are certified and they have warranties. And so those are some of the things I think you need to look for. We've heard horror stories about people who've bought used cars. But those are not – they're kind of, I think, the exception. It's only because we run a consumer organization that we hear them. But there are things you can do. And one thing that I always recommend that you do is make sure you take it to a certified mechanic to inspect it from head to toe, because you cannot, no matter what kind of reports you get, you cannot be absolutely certain that car hasn't been totaled.
You're absolutely right. And that may cost you $50 to $75,
it's
the best money you can spend because that's your real warranty. Now, the good news is that more and more used cars today have short warranties, but at least some kind of warranty,
mm-hmm.
whereas a few years ago they didn't. But your best warranty is finding out as much about that vehicle as possible and making an informed decision.
Right.
Now, remember, if the mechanic says, you know, the brakes are kind of bad on this or it needs new tires, it still may be a great car because then you can negotiate a better price. Go out and get the brakes fixed yourself. You know they were fixed properly,
right.
or the new tires that you need.
The other thing is to check and make sure that the recalls on that vehicle have been complied with, because the compliance rate, although it's better for cars, I think, than a lot of other appliances, for example, but still, that's a very important thing.
You know, Shirley, that is probably one of the most overlooked benefits of the government, and that is there is a free recall
mm-hmm.
database you can punch. people should check their own cars.
I have. I went in and checked my the car I used to have. Oh, I don't know, a few years ago, and I had complied. There hadn't been all that many recalls on it, but there were some things that were, you know, critical that you have changed.
Well, we estimate that anywhere from 60 to 70% of the vehicles recalls get attended to, but that means 30% of us are driving in vehicles that may not have their recall addressed.
And believe me, the manufacturers are not going to issue a recall unless there's a good reason for it.
That's exactly right. And also remember that that recall issue will be repaired at no charge to you, no matter how long ago it occurred. So, Shirley, your advice is great. Everyone should go online and check their car to see if it's been recalled.
Now, what do you think about the new vehicles? Are consumers happy with what they're seeing in the new 2012 cars?
Well, we've looked at it from two perspectives.
First, I'm very happy.
Yes. Well, there we go. We got one American that is ready
right.
to go. Well, the bottom line is, and as you said, I've been looking at these vehicles for 32 years. I can say without a doubt that cars today are better than they've ever been before. And what that means is that if you're out there in the market buying a new car, you can expect that car to last 150,000, 175,000 mm-hmm. miles. You wouldn't have expected that 10 or 15 years ago. So that says two things. One, this big investment, if you spread it out over a long period of time, will be very economical. And secondly, make sure you make a good choice because you're gonna keep this car for a long time.
You got to be sure you like it. That's right. Well, now, are manufacturers listening to consumers? I mean, suppose consumers – I got a survey from Chevy after I bought my car. And do they listen? Do they pay attention?
More and more manufacturers have realized that it's a lot easier to keep their customers satisfied than try to bring back a dissatisfied customer. So they are investing in customer service surveys, consumer satisfaction surveys, and so forth and so on. One, I strongly recommend that consumers take a few minutes and fill these out because it's
let them know.
It's a way for them to find out what your experiences really are. Secondly, because they are so competitive with each other, which is great for us,
yes.
They are bending over backwards to build vehicles that meet the needs and respond to the issues that are brought up in these surveys.
There's one thing that really puzzles me, and that is about when I was shopping for my SUV, I looked at an awful lot of them, and many of them had seats. They brag about they can carry 4 or 5 passengers or even more, 7, whatever. But don't they ever think about the fact that most people don't ride in the back seat of a car? And if they do, it's kids. Why don't they give more leg room in the front to the front passengers? Why don't they just make the seat slide back a little bit farther? That has been one of my complaints for years. And people say, well, that's so you can put people in the back seat. Well, you know, I can always let the seat forward if they need room.
Well,
that,
I think
that puzzles me.
Well, I think that's an issue. And I think it really goes to something else that we talked about earlier. And that is, are you comfortable in all aspects of that car? And one of the things
front seat and back seat,
exactly, Shirley. And I recommend that if you're out for a test drive with a salesperson, have the salesperson get behind the wheel. You sit in the back seat
right.
and see how comfortable it is.
See how it is. That's absolutely right. Because that to me is so short-sighted by the manufacturers. And I've told this to many dealers as I've car shopped. Why do you do this? Why don't you give leg room? Because I like to drive. I like to stretch my legs out more, and there's just not room there. I mean, it's surprising.
But in your new car, you probably have enough room.
I do, because it's bigger.
And because you tested it out and you made that determination.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
that, and that goes back to that all-important test drive. And we're going to call it the Shirley Rucker Rent-A-Car Test Drive.
You got it. Well, Jack, thank you so much for bringing us a lot of insight into what's new and going on in the car world. And thank you for doing it for us. For years, and we really appreciate it. And thank you for joining me. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here in Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Jack Gillis, the auto expert at the Consumer Federation of America, and the new book is The Car Book. I recommend it. I'm Shirley Rucker, and thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rucker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.